Caught Sight of the Virtual Hardwood, it's the MLC Podcast. This is episode 505. I am Andrew, Andrew in our forum, Andrew MLSC on X. With me as always, my co-host Derek, DP3 in our forum, and DP3G and DP384 on X. Derek, good to be on here with you as always. What's new this week?
Andrew, I have What a Leaper stuck in my head.
Ugh.
Because of stupid Slam and Jam 96 for PlayStation. That session we had was brutal. That was maybe the least fun that I've had on a game in a long time.
I admire us for sticking it out and finishing that session. Yeah.
The gameplay is so repetitive. The game just lacks physics. The commentary is just, I think he said, "What a leaper," probably 150 times.
On a layup as well. Not even a dunk.
That game. Yeah. Over and over and over again. And it's just the gameplay when you play it co-op like that against the CPU is so bland. And it's too bad because similar games in that genre did it right. Right? Like NBA Give and Go. The game is a lot more fun. But Slam and Jam 96 is just missing something. And that session was honestly a nightmare.
It was. And for people who've never played Slam and Jam, there was a couple of games in that Slam and Jam series, or I guess two games isn't really a series, but Slam and Jam 96, it stars Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Magic Johnson. They are the only licensed players in it. It's made by Left Field Productions, who made Kobe Bryant in NBA Courtside, made that series. Also Crystal Dynamics involved with that. So some big names involved in the production of that game. It is a sim arcade hybrid, very similar to, as you said, NBA Give and Go by Konami, that style of game, to the point where you might call it a ripoff, the same way, or certainly made in that style, the same way that Barkley's Shut Up and Jam was a jam ripoff, or made in that jam style. And they just got it wrong. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's too bad because there's some good bones there, right?
Sure.
Like being able to, you know, swat a shot out of the air and knock the defender to the floor. You can do tip dunks in that game, hook shots, even though pretty much everybody can do the same hook shot, but there are hook shots in that game. There's, you know, no dribbling moves, but the animations for the dribbling in general don't look bad. Even the shooting animations don't look too bad, but the game is just missing something. It's just missing substance. Luckily, we were able to have a session right after that on NBA Live 16 for the Xbox One, where we used the Timberwolves against the CPU Blazers, and we won that game in overtime. Some big threes by Zach LaVine and Andrew Wiggins, some clutch plays by the corpse of Kevin Garnett.
Yeah,
where he actually hit a key hook shot and fadeaway in the overtime that helped us seal the deal. But yeah, NBA Live 16 is definitely rough because of the issues we mentioned on prior shows. But the game can produce some super exciting moments and realistic gameplay.
Well, it was a tale of two rough games for very different reasons. And I did enjoy that session of NBA Live 16 a lot more. That was a good idea to play that game and cleanse our palate, as it were, after that game of Slam and Jam. And going back to Slam and Jam for a moment, just trying to play that co-op with that really zoomed-in angle. Like, I'm used to a baseline angle, but really zooming it in like that, flipping the perspective and having to run towards the screen is an interesting choice, and it does work in other games. I do believe NBA Give and Go does that as well. But as you say, that lack of physics, the lack of consistency, like, as you said, we can knock people out of the air with blocks, and that's kind of satisfying, but whether that's a foul or whether that's a loose interpretation of a physical block is really a roll of the dice. And it did seem like the CPU could knock us down a lot more than we could knock the CPU down, which is a classic CPU middle finger, as was the half-court three that they casually nailed.
I mean, yeah, as you know, I'm not a fan of the 2K camera view, the behind view. I'm more of a fan of the broadcast angle or the classic cam from like NBA Live 95 or NBA Live 96, which was also used in the NBA Shootout series. It was even called Classic. And I actually showed a highlight recently of Steve Francis at NBA Shootout 2000 for the PlayStation. And he does the Rondo ball fake on the layup. How cool is that animation in that game?
That's just a great move. That. Yeah, I love to see it.
Yeah, other games around that time didn't have that move in it. So it is really cool to see that the creators at 989 Studios were doing that. Yeah, I really like that isometric view and the broadcast view. But furthering the problem, like you said, on Slam and Jam 96 is the fact that it's the 2K cam, but it's also a zoomed-in version, right, from behind the play. And it's really tough co-op to know where you are on the floor. You have to try to get in front of the camera to be able to see yourself because it doesn't show the entire floor. When somebody goes in for a dunk or a layup, the camera super zooms in. So the other player is now completely off screen. So terrible camera choice for that game as well. I feel like it could have been better. I feel like they could have added more physics, maybe dribble moves, even like simple dribble moves that were in games like NBA Showtime, NBA on NBC, NBA Hoops, where you tap the turbo button and the guy can do like a crossover or a spin move, etc. So I feel like they definitely could have done more with that game. But at least the live 16 session was a little bit more fun.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I might have to apologize to some of the NBA 2K games that I've criticized for their directional passing logic, Derek, because trying to just make a pass to who you want, especially in co-op play, there were so many times that you made a great cut to the basket or we're on the break and I'm trying to swing it to you, but I'm holding the D-pad towards your player, so it should go there, hitting pass, and it's passing to a CPU player that I take control of instead of passing to you. How many plays did we mess up just trying to get it to each other, and it's just passing the ball around the perimeter to a CPU player? That was, you look at Konami's NBA In the Zone, the first game, where you had to select the pass recipient. That was clunky, but at least you could send it where you wanted to, if you use that mechanic correctly. Yeah, Slam and Jam, trying to pass the ball to a teammate, another human teammate, is pretty much impossible.
Yeah, you're using Magic Johnson in a video game centered around Magic Johnson, and you can't hit the appropriate man with a pass. You know, and Magic Johnson's the greatest passer of all time, so that's an immediate red flag right there. That's also a reason why the original NBA In the Zone, when we connected on that session was a little bit frustrating. Sure, that game has better bones overall and is a more complete game than Slam and Jam 96, so we were able to get some enjoyment out of that session. But the passing mechanics in that game are also pretty piss poor, if we're being completely honest.
Yeah, very.
And not cutting corners. So the Live 16 game, though, I do want to point out that the CPU plays pretty well at times. And whenever we left CJ McCollum or Damian Lillard open, they were raining threes on us. And if we tried to pressure Damian Lillard at the top of the key or really anywhere on the floor and kind of overplay him, he was blowing by us. And he hit some pretty dazzling layups, some really nice layups inside as a result, and he also threw it down on us a few times, which he can do in real life. And then of course we had Mason Plumlee, aka Shaq, just throwing down two-handed hammers on us consistently. That game has a lot of great moments. I think the post game is pretty rough, but you know, once you get used to how to spin left or right and, you know, do hook shots and little fadeaways and everything, it can be decently enjoyable. But yeah, I mean, it's fun using that Timberwolves team, right? And, you know, you use them in NBA Live 16, and the only guy that's still on that team today is Karl Anthony Towns. You know, KG's obviously not there. Wiggins gone. LaVine gone. Rubio gone. Tayshaun Prince is on that bench, right? So, like, it's really interesting. I think we also have Andre Miller on that team.
Yes.
At the end of his career. So, it's always interesting playing a game like NBA Live 16 because that game came out in 2015, which isn't super long ago, but the rosters are just entirely different
than what they are. It is going on a decade when you think about it. But
isn't that wild?
Yeah. It does seem like it was just a few years ago, but it is going on a decade. But it shows you that it just, within 7 or 8 years, how much turnover there is on a single team within the whole league. Like, if you try to update the rosters for, well, you can't do it for Live 16, but say 2K16, the amount of players that you have to create, the amount of players, the original players that you have at your disposal to move around and be on the rosters, you know, it's getting very thin, that roster of original players that are still in the league, obviously. So, yeah, that and of course that is something that I found with trying to do 2K11 rosters, which is now over a decade old, obviously. So the further back you go, the more players you have to create, to the point where if you're creating a roster update for, say, Live 2005, we actually just had one updated to the download section, actually, Derek, by ICE, and a new 2024 season roster update for NBA Live 2005 PC. I'll have to check that out. But, you know, the only player in that roster from the off the top of my head that's still in the game, LeBron James.
Yeah, it's actually easier to go backwards than it is forwards.
Absolutely.
When you're trying to update a roster for like 2K16, or if Live 16 had the capability of doing it for Live 16. For example, Sticky Fingers is doing an 09-10 roster for NBA 2K16. It's probably a lot easier to do that because veterans weren't being pushed out of the league, et cetera, you know, in like 15, 16, around that time. So a lot of those guys are still in the game to reflect those 09-10 teams, right? You look now, and if you tried to do like a 2023 roster for NBA 2K16, most of those vets have been pushed out, Andrew.
For sure.
Right? A lot of those, the players that are in NBA 2K16 on the rosters are completely useless in a 2023 roster because the league has just gotten younger and younger. So if you're trying to do a 2023 roster, you have to create a whole lot more players. And it's not just creating a player's face, as you know. It's the work that goes into doing their attributes, signatures, tendencies, their badges, all of that. So it's just a ton of work. But it is too bad, too, that the vets have been being pushed out of the league.
It really is. It really is. And it feels like there's players that could still give quality minutes off the bench here and there, and certainly mentor the young players. And as we've talked about before, when you see some of the situations with Ja Morant, for example, you know, having an old head in his ear saying, hey, maybe don't do that, young fella. You know, that's a good idea to have that veteran mentorship, and not to disregard the so-called old heads. One thing I will say about Slam and Jam that it has that Live 16 doesn't is the ability to break the backboard. And we saw an opponent break several backboards in the course of one game. And that's on six-minute quarters, Derek. I cannot imagine playing that game on 12-minute quarters. I mean, playing Live 16 on six-minute quarters, I was quite happy to... I would have been happy to play even longer. But Slam and Jam, yeah, I don't think I could have taken much more of that.
And it was the same guy on the other team, which is also weird. Number 55, the guy that I said looked like Eric Williams.
Yeah.
He broke the backboard, I think, six times. And he broke it on consecutive possessions.
That's right.
At one point, he broke it. And then on the next time down, they threw him an oop and he broke it again. That takes the fun out of it, right? When it happens too often.
Yeah.
And I think that there's some interesting design choices with that game. And I pointed them out to you in the chat during the session. The team that we played was Houston, but they were wearing blue, right? So they were wearing like blue Knicks colors. And on that team, they have a shooting guard, number 3, who looks exactly like John Starks. And he was even playing like John Starks. And they had a number 34 on that team who looks just like Charles Oakley. And he was killing us. And I think those design choices are pretty funny. And on our team, we had a shooting guard, number 3. And I know this is impossible because Chris Paul wasn't even on the radar, obviously. Yeah. This is a mid-90s basketball game. Our shooting guard, number 3, who's bald, looks pretty much identical to Chris Paul. You wouldn't argue that looked, you know, you'd be like, oh, that looks like Chris Paul. So I did think some of that was cool, but I do think that the design choices on the way the players look, they tried to get close to NBA counterparts in some way, shape, or form.
I think so. And you can actually mod that game. If you open up the executable with a hex editor, you can go through and at least change the names. I've done that before. I think I had this game, a demo of this game, on a demo disc called Sports Crazy. Had a lot of sports games on that, obviously demos of sports games, including NBA Action 98, aka NBA Fastbreak 98, the PC version of that. That's the first time I played that was the demo on that demo disc, but it also had Slam and Jam. And I did find that you could edit the names with a hex editor, but the not Lakers, the Magic and Kareem All-Stars, there's number 42 that is obviously supposed to be James Worthy. There's a 30 that's, I'm guessing, supposed to be Kurt Rambis without glasses. But yeah, that number 3.
I wish the number 42 guy played more like James Worthy for us, because he played more like number, like, 42 Vin Baker with the Celtics. He played more like the old done for Vin Baker.
Absolutely. But they obviously did try and get the NBA counterparts. There's 29 teams based on the NBA at the time. They don't have the names, the team names, but they've got even Vancouver and Toronto that brought into the league that year. So they're really mimicking the NBA there. Obviously, they don't have the license, so they do have these generic players. But as you said, they are copying the appearances of some contemporary NBA players, not putting them on the same teams, changing up the colors of the uniforms, obviously, to further avoid any issues with mimicking the league, which they're still obviously doing. But that is something that games without licenses did back in the day. You look back at World League Basketball, you look at Super Dunk Shot. That's the kind of stuff they were doing back in the 90s. And we don't see those games anymore, which is kind of a shame. Although, as we've said before, the NBA is the selling point, so it is very tough to sell an unbranded, generic, fictional league basketball game. But there was potential there, as you said. But I think that may be one of the worst arcade basketball games that we've played together so far.
Yeah, it's also weird, the Kareem edition, right? Because Kareem had been out of the league for roughly 7 and 8 years.
Right, yeah.
At that point, which makes me think, was that the driving force to go with fictional rosters?
Probably,
right? Was it because, you know, Magic wanted Kareem to be in the game, and you can't have a full-fledged roster, like a full-fledged game centered around Magic and Kareem, and then have real NBA rosters, unless they did like a whole like classic or legends team. You know, maybe they thought you couldn't have a game that represented Magic and Kareem, because remember, Magic did come back for the 95-96 season, so him being in the game is okay, really, if you wanted to try to represent the NBA at that time, because there was also rumors that he was going to come back for the 96-97 season as well. But you can't center the game around Magic and Kareem and then have, you know, the NBA license, those rosters, and then just throw Kareem on the Lakers or something. You'd have to, you know, do current rosters, and then if you wanted to pay tribute to Kareem, you put him on like a Legends team. And maybe they didn't want to go that far, right, when they made that game, so they went fully fictional. But I think the game also loses substance because of that, right? So if you combine the fact that the gameplay is very bland and blah and repetitive with the fact that you're also not even using, you know, real NBA players, then it is just kind of like the perfect storm of, you know, just kind of blah.
Perfect storm of suck, absolutely. Maybe it's a bit harsh, but no, I agree. I mean, in the early 90s, you had Michael Jordan in Flight for PC, which has MJ is the only real player and everybody else is fictional. David Robinson's Supreme Court, obviously. And those games, many of them are interesting to play and they're varying quality. But as you say, when you don't have the rest of the NBA there, you don't even have the novelty of playing with a league of real players. So if it's not a quality experience on the sticks, then, you know, you don't even have the NBA license to back it up. And Slam and Jam 95 came out the year before that, obviously. It was actually quite positively reviewed. I'm looking at the reception section here on Wikipedia. The Next Generation publication reviewed the 3DO version, gave it 4 out of 5 stars, and said, "The pace is lightning fast, and when you hear the roar of the crowd, it's bound to give you chills. If you have any interest in the sport at all and own a 3DO, this is a must-have." They also reviewed the PlayStation version of the game, gave it 3 stars out of 5, said, "It's still a great two-player game, but the one-player game doesn't hold its end up, and the technological race is passing this game right by." And I think when you look at the sequel that we played, 96, it definitely had been surpassed by that point, and they didn't even do it as well as Konami did with NBA Give and Go.
Yeah, I haven't played Slam and Jam 95, so I'm going to reserve judgment on that title, and maybe I'll try to get my hands on it so I can talk about it on the show. But you know what? In the mid-90s, there were too many good basketball games being made, Andrew, right? They were constantly breaking new ground with different basketball video games and the mechanics in them, etc. And so I think just Slam and Jam 96 falls behind, Right. And I think that there's plenty of games for us to play and revisit that would be a more positive experience, even with, you know, games without the NBA license. And in fact, we have played games in the past that didn't have the NBA license or the license for the college basketball players, et cetera, games like Coach K College Basketball and whatnot. And we had a blast. So it's not totally on the NBA license. I just think that the gameplay is not strong.
Sure.
Overall.
Absolutely. And they've done a decent job of mimicking the style of Give and Go. But as you said, the physics are not there. The inconsistency with the foul calls was the big one. It just felt like we were getting screwed over constantly in the second half. Or we were getting knocked down and we at the other end giving them so many free throws by doing the same thing. And that balance is vital, because without that balance, the challenge comes from the CPU just cheating, basically. And we know that the CPU does pull strings in even the best games, but that was so blatant and so poorly done that... Yeah, it'd be great if we could revisit NBA Give and Go over the next week or so, just to compare, just to see that style of game done right.
Yeah, that would be worth it, and then we can upload that video to the NLSC YouTube. That Slam and Jam 96 game is not going up.
No.
On the NLSC YouTube, it is not worth it. You wouldn't be able to see the frustration on Andrew and my faces, because we were ready to put that game down at halftime.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. And
first
Magic,
quarter was good.
To your point about,
first quarter was kind of good. And then it just
sort of. But to your point on fouls, Magic Johnson fouled out at the beginning of the third quarter.
Yeah.
In that game. And out of his six fouls, three of them were just BS charges. How ridiculous were those? Where all you're doing is dribbling up the floor and you don't even look like you're really running in to anybody, and then you hear the whistle blow and it's a foul and it's a charge and they're going the other way. So yeah, a lot of poor design choices, I would say, with that game. I think the biggest issue with it, though, again, is just the repetitive nature of it.
Reminds me a bit of NBA Showdown and the Lakers versus Celtics, Bulls versus Blazers, etc. That era of just trying to make a move around a player and there's a collision, and way too often it's a charging call.
Yeah, Tacoma Super NBA Basketball had a lot of bad charging calls.
That
I know
too,
that
yeah.
Josh and Dave from Name O Game O, that was the thing they hated the most about that game. They said that when they were on the NLSC podcast with us as guests. But yeah, no, I mean, we've been connecting a lot lately, though, on Parsec. And we continued the road trip on NBA Jam on Fire Edition. So again, I open up the Xbox app and then Andrew and I connect using Parsec, and he's able to play my Xbox One with me. So we are at the 65% completion point of Road Trip. And we used a ton of different teams on this most recent session. We used the Nimble Ninjas.
Mm.
We used the NBA Street Team. We used Kempin Payton from the Supersonics. We used Irving and Dawkins from the 76ers. We used the Santa team, so the Christmas, the holiday team, et cetera. So it was really fun to use all of those different teams. And I think we only lost one game during that session, and it was on the Gold Challenge. But yeah, we were able to get through a lot of games, and it was fun.
Yeah, talk about the CPU coming storming back with some comeback logic and pulling the strings behind the scenes. You missed a dunk with Irving. I missed one with Dawkins, like back to back, you know.
Yeah, that Irving missed dunk was really bad, because I think we were down by one.
Yeah.
At that point, and there was what, 30 seconds?
And it wasn't a block.
Left.
Yeah. It was just a miss.
No, it was just completely wide open. And he did that dunk where he tries to dunk it and like he gets caught on the rim and then he falls to the floor. And then you missed a dunk after with Dawkins, and we lost that game. And it's good job.
Yeah,
good job.
That was definitely a little bit contrived. But as always, we didn't want to end on a low note, so we came back and we won that game. And I've actually recently finished going through the Road Trip on PS3. I'd already done so on 360 last year. So I can't get enough of playing through Road Trip. It's even more fun to do co-op, obviously, because when you do have a frustrating game, you know, you can kind of... You know, we're not in the same room, but it's almost like we're looking at each other and saying, you know what, let's keep playing. You know, we message each other and say,
tell everybody, tell all of our listeners how fast I hit rematch.
Yeah, straight away, and like, we need to do this. We need to get this win. And I
never ask Andrew if he wants to play another one. I just immediately hit rematch because I just can't handle it. Like, yeah. I hate that loss, and I hate ending on a low note, which is why I'm glad we won that live 16 session after that terrible Slam and Jam 96 session, because it's like, all right, you know, we were able to end on a win.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Road Trip continues to be a blast. As I say, it is satisfying to do it together, because if I have a rough loss like that playing by myself when I'm just working through the Road Trip for the second time solo on this PS3 version, as I did, sometimes I just say, okay, you know what, I will end on a loss this time, or I'll play something else. But you do have that motivation when you are playing together to work towards that common goal, as you said before, and finish on a high. So I'm glad we're able to do that. The Nimble Ninjas are a team that I've been playing with on the PS3 version as I was finishing up the Road Trip in my copy. I don't know the origin of the Nimble Ninjas, to be honest, but they do have a couple of powerful players. There's the rotund guy who can just knock down threes.
I was about to say, I just like attacking the rim and throwing it down on somebody with a guy with a beer gut.
Yeah.
That's the enjoyable. And you can see the shirt is a little bit higher than, like, you can actually see the beer gut skin.
It's ridden up. Yeah, the shirt has.
Yeah. It's really good graphics. And it's nice beating up on NBA players with that guy.
And there's a couple other players on that team, the other ninjas, who can dunk and can block shots. And that is quite a powerful team to play with. I did enjoy playing with them. Worked out for us as well. The Dawkins and Irving are obviously always going to be a go-to for us, as are Kemp and Payton, with the 76ers and Sonics, respectively. And, of course, the Street Team is always fun to play with as well.
No, absolutely. And I think our go-tos, like I said to somebody on our Discord, is always going to be Kemp and Payton and Irving and Dawkins. Because depending on the challenge, those two teams, one of them is going to fit. Right. And we like all four of those players a lot. So I think those are always going to be the main go-tos. I do need to give a shout out really quick to Kid Cash. So him and I actually connected on NBA 2K14 for the PC, and we did win our game. We were using an early 2000s UBR roster, and you'll like this, Andrew. We were controlling the Patrick Ewing led Magic versus the Hakeem Olajuwon led Raptors.
Yeah, those are some familiar faces in unfamiliar places for sure.
Right, exactly. So I wanted to put those two teams on the floor. We did end up winning that game using the Magic. It was really fun using T-Mac and getting a few buckets with old man Patrick Ewing. Hakeem Olajuwon a few times did put the moves on us, just like he did when he was with the Raptors. He just didn't do it as frequent as when he was with the Rockets in his prime. And Vince Sanity did some damage to us as well. But he had been really itching to get his hands on NBA 2K14 for the PC because of how we talked about it on the NLSC podcast. So while he was waiting for it in the mail, we had that Parsec session, and he was really fun to play with once again because he knows the players and where to use them on the floor. And even though he was a little rusty on the sticks because he hadn't played NBA 2K14 PC before, he still did an admirable job. And then we also went to the streets after that game and played a 5-on-5 street ball game, and we surrounded ourselves with some dunkers. We had, you know, Stromile Swift on the team, Darius Miles, Shaq, etc. We did end up losing that game 22-21, but it was still a lot of fun. So then he ended up getting NBA 2K14 PC in the mail, and I gave him a few tips on, you know, how to install mods and where to get the URB, which has single seasons going back to 1984. And he got the game installed. He got the mods installed. He sent me a screenshot, and he is in heaven. He is absolutely loving it. So I'll say again, I absolutely recommend to our listeners to pursue getting some of these older 2Ks on PC, and doing so by ordering the disc version off of a site like Amazon or eBay, etc., because you can get them for really cheap. And if you don't have a CD-ROM drive, you know, to install the game, etc., what you want to do is just get a USB external one. So it'll plug into your USB 2.0 or 3.0 port, and you can use that as your CD drive to install your games, play your games, etc. I do that with NBA Live 99. as you know. But those mods are still out there. The URB was very easy for him to install, it seemed. And this scoreboard mods, roster mods, and a game that has some of the best gameplay of all time of any basketball game. So good job by Kid Cash to get that all set up.
I think we're going to see more people going back to those classics. Those really strong releases from the late 2000s, early 2010s, that do have those mods still available for them. Even going back to Live 2005 to 08, I think we're going to see that. I absolutely support that, as you do as well, I know. And that's really cool to hear that you had that great session. And yeah, very memorable 2002 Raptors versus Magic with Hakeem, Old Man Hakeem and Old Man Ewing in as being unfamiliar faces in unfamiliar places. And as for Stromal Swift, always a fun player to go back and play with. A virtual hardwood legend, I would argue. Actually played a game with Wizcard Rush's 2009 season roster of Alive 10 the other day, and I was playing with the Nets. Had to put him in the starting lineup ahead of Yi, and just throw down some dunks with him. Actually got an alley-oop to work in Live 10. That felt like an achievement, Derek. But that 2009 roster is very well done. And as I said when I talked about that roster on a previous show, it's a blast to play an old season roster, even just rolling it back a year or two, with the mechanics of NBA Live 10. So you can play the 2009 season, the NBA Live 09 season, with NBA Live 10's improved mechanics. And I would absolutely recommend checking out that roster. It is very easy to install, whether it is on original hardware or the emulator. So yeah, give these old mods a look and dust off these old classics, because, you know, if you are frustrated with some of the issues in modern games, as we are, as we've talked about on previous shows, you know, don't put up with them. Don't slog through the mud of trying to enjoy these games. Go back and play something you enjoy.
Stromal Swift is another guy, like you stated, a video game legend, who is just far better in video games than he was in real life. And just much like the guys like Pat Garrity, Walter McCarty, etc. So always enjoyable to use him in video games. And that alley-oop that you did on NBA Live 10 was incredibly impressive. And it reminded me of a couple of the alley-oops that we completed to Birdman, Chris Anderson.
Yes.
When we had our session on that game, when we were using the Nuggets. And that was a blast. So I also want to give another shout out to somebody in the community, and that is the Live King. He did pick up NBA 2K24 for the PC, and he got his hands on the sticks. He shared a highlight on X. And I am curious, because as you know, he always gives good feedback on the games. He always messes with sliders, etc. I'm curious of what he thinks of 2K24 PC, because I know that he's had that game for his Series S or X for quite a while now. So we'll need to hear his feedback and talk about it on the show.
Absolutely. And also, we are seeing a few more mods come through for 2K24 PC now that Luya has released the hook tool for the game. So that's also cool to see.
Yeah, I mean, I want the modding community to be more active.
Yes.
On the NLSC. I miss when it was booming. You know, in the early mid 2010s, there was so much talk about mods, so many free mods were being released, so many big projects being worked on. And then it just kind of died out over the last few years as people's passion for the newer 2Ks kind of, you know, started going in the wrong direction. And, you know, people just overall just feel like the PC version has been getting stale. I really do hope, Andrew, that for NBA 2K25, that 2K smartens up and makes it a next-gen title, if they do indeed once again release on PC, because I think that will be the shot that people need, right?
Absolutely.
I think that will be the motivation that people need in order to hit the ground running and make modding, you know, awesome again on the NLSC.
And there's more content to work with, as we've said before, the MyNBA eras, for example.
Exactly. I think that people like Hoke Up Guy, let's see, Easy Madden, there's just a bunch of modders in the community that just jump all over that retro content, right? That historic content. And I think that doing something with My NBA Eras where it puts the bones in place to do like a full UBR roster, it would make it a lot easier to do like a UBR type setup or URB type setup that people would be jumping all over that. And how cool would that be to see a UBR or a URB with all of the retro single seasons going back to maybe even the 50s or 60s and whatnot in a new game?
Oh, for sure.
I mean, that would be sweet. And I would definitely jump all over that as long as I like the gameplay.
But it goes back to something that Lady Culture said, that trying to make these rosters every single year, that does burn people out. And unless you can easily convert them, you know, it makes people reluctant to move on, and certainly makes people reluctant to take on the project year after year.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. And I commend people like Stildo for, you know, what he's doing with NBA 2K19. I see him put the game on multiple times every day, by the way, because he's still plugging away on those retro single season rosters for that game. And, you know, Thunder Shack on NBA 2K20, Sticky Fingers right now on NBA 2K16, the people at URB who were updating their rosters, you know, at many different points this year. And they do have a free release there on the NLSC, and just the people that stick with those huge roster projects and stick with games that they love. It really is a labor of love. There's just a lot of work put into it, but they love what they're doing. So that's why they continue.
And I'll also shout out Pat the Head, who's been doing multi-year rosters for NBA 2K13. And I did see a post from Pep in the forum about the future of URB. Apparently, it is not done yet. There was a bit of a doom and gloom post in the NBA 2K14 section of the forum, understandably so, because the releases have slowed down, and UBR has since ceased being released. But URB is apparently still going to happen, still going to have new releases moving forward. No further information at this time, but Pep did say that he has been talking to SCO, and there will be future releases. So once again, there are still people working diligently on these classics. So yeah, stay tuned and look out for more work coming for them.
And look at Kid Cash's reaction to the URB and getting that installed and how excited he is, right? This is what I mean by seeing the big picture. By SCO and Slim continuing that project, you know, Pep continuing that project, all the people that help make that project happen, they're making it so many gamers out there are creating memories they never would have created, right?
Absolutely.
Just they're able to enjoy rosters that they never would have been able to enjoy, using players that they love that they wouldn't have been able to use in those games, you know, using their imagination and fantasy scenarios and whatnot, using those teams and players and those single seasons and all the different rosters that come with those projects. So yeah, big picture wise, it is just massive on the fun scale and the memories scale. So it's just awesome stuff.
We will always support that in our community. Modding, you know, we go way back to 1996 with the modding scene for the original NBA Live games, the early NBA Live games. And hey, to borrow from EA Sports slogan, because we already borrow their name for our domain name for the NLSC, NBA-Live.com, of course, you know, if it's not in the game, modders will put it in the game.
Exactly. And that's the thing, is look at how many great scoreboard mods have been created, right? Like TNT, NBC, Fox Sportsnet, Comcast Sportsnet, basically, you know, CBS Sports, like basically any scoreboard you can think of, somebody has made it for like NBA 2K14 or for, you know, the more popular titles and whatnot. It is just wild what these modders can do. Like I'm a modder myself, and I'm still just so impressed and blown away.
Absolutely. The same. I'm the same. Before we go on, a reminder that the NLSC podcast comes out every week on the NLSC, NBA-Live.com, as well as our YouTube channel. We're also on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other podcast apps. If you're listening on any of those apps, we'd greatly appreciate a review. To keep up with the show and everything we're doing with basketball gaming in general, connect with us on social media. On Twitter and Facebook, we are the NLSC. We also have an Instagram, NLSC Basketball, and on YouTube, we're youtube.com/NBA Live Series Center. Once again, visit us at NBA-Live.com, where in addition to the podcast, you'll also find all of our original content, as well as our forum and modding community. But yes, we will continue to spotlight the community's efforts, and of course talk about any mods that we make as well, and the games that we're playing, the games that we're playing together, separately, and with the members of the community. And speaking of community interactions, Derek, it is time to open up the mailbag.
to the mailman. Slamming it down with a nasty dunk.
So I asked the community, who do you enjoy playing video games with the most and why? And the reason I thought of this question was we had just finished our session and we on NBA Jam on Fire Edition. And I had a blast. And I ended that session thinking, man, it's really nice to be able to connect with another human being, not only just another human being, a friend and whatnot, and get on the sticks on these basketball video games. And as you know, I do the same thing all the time with my brother Nick. And then when my brother Mark comes over, we're on the sticks as well. So yeah, I wanted to know, you know, who the community likes to play with the most.
And obviously that is a big part of being a community, right? Being able to connect and play with one another and form these friendships as you and I have, not just creating content for the site, obviously, but also connecting so many times to play. You know, would we have ever met if not for the community?
Exactly. And we talked about that on a prior show. You and I meeting through the NLSC community allowed us to, you know, connect on Parsec eventually. And if we hadn't met through the forums, through basketball video games, then you and I more than likely never would have met as a result because we live on opposite sides of the world.
Indeed. And the same goes for the people I've met who are in Australia or even New Zealand, the guys from NLSC Thrill Ho. And of course we have ZZ Cool J from the States as well. But yeah, meeting them through the forum and then connecting with them to play and forming these friendships and I mean, those are the people that I've played with most, apart from you, in recent years, connecting to play 2K Pro-Am and a bit of the rec when Team Pro-Am started being more restrictive with its requirements for 5 users in every single game, where the rec doesn't, or you connect with other people from around the world, or randoms, as the case may be. But yeah, forming those friendships is a big part of what's made that so enjoyable. I mean, sometimes the games haven't always gone to plan, especially NBA 2K Online. But if nothing else, you've got these friends to talk to and to banter with and to joke around with, you know, on the voice chat as we did, on the group chat on through the PlayStation Network when we were playing. So it always made it fun to connect every Friday, even when the games were kind of rough at times.
I think NLSC Thrill Ho on NBA 2K17 will always stand out for you.
It was a peak, yeah.
I think that was your golden age for multiplayer gaming.
Easily, yeah.
Because you've played hundreds of games with your friends, you know, in the rec and whatnot, and created countless memories doing so. And you played that game pretty much throughout the entire cycle, right up until NBA 2K18.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's definitely going to stand out for you. And, you know, for me, it's just a bond that my brothers and I have had since we were little, right? And so my brothers, Mark and Nick, you know, we're all close in age and whatnot. And we've just been playing basketball video games together for years and years. I mean, my brother Nick and I go back to NBA Live 96, where we, you know, did a legend season back then. And guess what? In 2023, we have multiple legend seasons going. So that kind of gives you an idea of how much fun we've had doing that and, you know, how many countless memories we have made. You know, whether it's a all-time fantasy draft season or a fantasy draft season with current teams, or whether it's using classic teams, whether it's playing on the same team or head-to-head, just playing basketball video games with my brothers is something that I hope to do until my last breath. I know that sounds absolutely ridiculous, but there's nothing I get lost in more. It's that and playing real basketball, Andrew. And playing real basketball, I've been doing a ton of that lately. I joined a third league, so I'm playing in 3 leagues right now. Hopefully I don't get hurt, right? But playing real basketball and playing basketball video games with my brothers, that those are the highlights of my life. So the other piece too was at times playing basketball video games growing up with my dad. And we would play games like NBA Fast Break 98, you know, some of the, you know, Coach K college basketball. We would play the original NBA 2K. You go back, we would play like Double Dribble, etc. So that was a bonding moment there as well. And I know that you grew up and you played with your cousin.
Yes.
A lot. So you had those moments with him and you probably regret zero of those sessions and, you know, probably created countless memories with him. And then now you and I, over the last 3 years, have been able to do that, you know, on opposite sides of the world. And I feel like we've had a lot of great moments. You know, game winners, amazing highlights, comeback victories like on NBA Inside Drive, where we were down by 20 in the fourth quarter and we came back and won, et cetera. So, yeah, like I, you know, like I said on X at one point, you know, basketball video games really can bring people together and basketball in general.
Absolutely. And as we've said before, there's still that lingering stigma against gaming of all genres that, oh, you've got to grow up and not play video games anymore. But again, it's no different to sitting down and vegging out and watching some Netflix. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah, go binge watch Big Bang Theory while I play a basketball video game.
I mean, you know,
you're no better because you watch that.
Whatever you enjoy, that's what it comes down to. However you enjoy your free time, as long as you're taking care of your responsibilities, not neglecting friendships and relationships and work and bills and all of that stuff. I mean, it just comes down to enjoying your free time, basically. And yeah, I had a great time playing with my cousin Clinton growing up. He would come down every school holidays for pretty much the 2 weeks at a time, or 4 or 5 weeks out of the 5 or 6 over the Christmas holidays, the school, which is the end of year holidays in Australia, obviously, being in the Southern Hemisphere as we are, that is the summer holidays over Christmas. And yeah, just a blast just playing Live 95 for the season mode in NBA Live 95. I talked about that in a recent Wayback Wednesday with the Rockets. And look, we didn't finish that season, and that's kind of a shame that we didn't. Got about 50, 60 games through that. But I don't have any regrets about that, as you said. There were still so many memories playing through that season. In hindsight, should we have just played through the playoffs so we would have actually got some completion? Because, you know, coming down for 2 weeks at a time, we're playing full-length quarters, 82 games. It is tough to get through a season, you know, even playing it most of the day as we did, and then in between going outside to shoot around and try to recreate highlights that we'd seen on NBA action and in games in the backyard on my hoop. But yeah, I don't regret that because it was still such a fun time and I have such great memories. We've always been close growing up. There's about 8 months between us in age. So like your brothers, we're very close in age, obviously. So even when he moved away, he was coming back for the school holidays and we were just indulging our love of basketball, going and getting trading cards, reading the magazines, playing the game, shooting around in the backyard. So many fun memories growing up with my cousin like that. And although I had friends who were slightly interested in basketball, none of them were as into it as I was. So playing with them, you know, it wasn't as fun. You know, we would play some arcade games and that was okay, but trying to play the sim games with them, you know, I wanted to be a bit more serious about it. They didn't really know the sport as or were into it as much as I was, so they weren't interested in playing that way. So it was definitely more fun playing with my cousin, who I was close to, as I said, but also shared that intense, passionate love of basketball with. So it was much more fun playing with him.
Think about how many avenues we were able to get our kicks with basketball on. Like you said, it was basketball video games. It was basketball itself, like going out and shooting around or playing for your school team, all that stuff. It was collecting basketball cards, right? It was reading basketball almanacs. It was reading basketball magazines. It was watching basketball, right? Like, how many different avenues were we able to go even back then to enjoy the sport and continue education on the sport?
Absolutely.
And everything. And we still do it today. And that's what's amazing about it. And that is wild that you were able to get 50 to 60 games into a season, even though he wasn't there that much when you were doing 12-minute quarters, et cetera. And you, like me, when you're really taking a season seriously, you want to do 12-minute quarters so the stats are realistic.
Exactly.
Right? So it's more of a sim style season. So yeah, really cool stuff. I do want to ask the community in regards to real basketball. Andrew, it's been tough recently. I'm trying to find the perfect basketball shoe. And I, like I said, I'm playing in a bunch of leagues right now. I'm full-fledged back into playing, but really having a hard time finding a good pair of mid-top shoes because I do like the ankle support. And currently right now I'm wearing budget Curry 2s, not because I'm on a budget, but because they actually fit me better than the regular Curry 2s. I think the Curry 2s that I have are called 302s. And they're good, they're flexible, I'm fast in them, but they don't have enough cushion and stability in relation to for shooting, for balance and whatnot. So I'm looking at different options, and I wanted to know what the community is wearing or what they like for basketball shoes. Do you like low top? Do you like mid top? Do you like light, or do you like your shoes to have a little bit more weight to them? What brands do you like, et cetera? So let me know.
Now I have to reach out to Arcane. He's the shoe guru of the NLSC, or the maybe the shuru, if you will. He's definitely into shoes. Is Ben? My favorite shoes that I've ever played in were Jordan 5s.
So for me, it was Jordan 11s and Nike Hyper Dunk Elites, which they almost look like boxing kicks, but they had great ankle support, but they were also light. They had Flywire, and I believe they came out in, I think, 2011, and they were an absolutely amazing pair. And then the third best is actually the ones that I'm wearing right now, which is wild to say, and it's those budget Curry 2s. But the Jordan 11s, I'm pretty sure I wore those for 3 or 4 years in a couple different colorways, but the Jordans just feel a little bit too heavy for me now. I feel lighter on my feet in some of the newer Curries and the mid-2000s Curries and whatnot. But yeah, it's tough to find the perfect shoe. But here's the other thing too about that though, Andrew. Everybody's feet is different.
For sure.
Right? So the thing is that some people have flat feet, some don't. Some people's feet are wider. Some people have different needs related to their play style. So even if a shoe works outstanding for you, it's very possible that it's not going to work for me.
And it's important that you make the decision based on, you know, how it feels and how it works for you, not just fashion or brand name.
Yeah. See, that's the other problem with some of the newer Jordans is a lot of them are for fashion, right? As opposed to actually hooping. Like, they're more constructed for looks and not performance.
Well, he's not wearing them anymore, I guess.
You know. Right, exactly, right. But I think the thing is that when I look at Jordans and whatnot online, I'm always looking for the classics because I know those were built for performance.
Absolutely. But as far as playing basketball video games with other people, you know, I've obviously had a blast playing with you, growing up playing the games with my cousin. Very fond memories there, fond memories with NLC Thrill Ho as well. But I've often been a solo player myself, you know, playing Dynasty Mode just by myself, and it's just been me against the CPU and indulging my GM fantasies, if you will, or my career fantasies, putting myself in the game like that. So I've had a lot of fun playing solo, but I do love changing it up and playing with other people.
Yeah, I have trouble getting into it solo. I really do, and I think it's because I've been spoiled by having two brothers my whole life, right?
Well, that is the difference, because I do have a brother, an elder brother, half-brother, who is 16 years older than me. I think there's only about a 3 or 4 month period that we were living in the same house together after I was born, and we had to move away briefly, and he stayed up here in Newcastle to go to university. So we've never really grown up together, obviously, in 16 years apart. I've kind of grown up as an only child, essentially, in some respects, certainly, you know, just having the parents to myself and consoles and video games to myself. So I've been more about making my own fun that way. So I'm a bit built a bit different, I guess, in that respect.
Yeah, I just love the shared experience.
Mm.
You know, like if I had hit that Michael Finley game winner on NBA Live 10 against the CPU, who was I going to turn to and say something about it, right? If I was playing the CPU, like, I can't share that moment with anybody. I could just look at the screen and say, hi, got you, CPU, right? Like, that's not exciting for me. But to, you know, to do that against you and for you to applaud it and for us to be able to put that in the NLSC top 10 and share that memory over and over again, even though sometimes you probably don't want to because it was against you and you lost. But I think that I will always favor the shared experience with my brothers or with you or with, you know, some of the people I've connected with in the NLSC Discord, you know, the Wizcard Rushes, Avery, et cetera. I'll always, Kid Cash, I'll always enjoy those shared experiences that much more.
Well, as problematic as it's become, as toxic as the online scene in NBA 2K has become, the fact that it is so popular, the fact that people do have interest in playing the online team play modes, again, does speak to the popularity and interest in that shared experience.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's just too toxic.
Yeah.
for me. I think that it's gone away from just enjoying the experience, and it's gone away from being appropriately competitive, and it's turned into insults and freezing people out and, you know, trash talking, swearing at each other. It's turned into slurs, right? It's turned into I'm better than you, and then low IQ basketball and stuff like that. Like, I just have absolutely no interest in that scene.
But fortunately, we have Parsec and other methods to connect with each other that avoid all of that stuff. And again, I can see more people doing that, and I would definitely encourage that, because much like a private league back in the day, private online leagues, you can kind of curate that experience and keep the bad actors out.
Exactly. That's why I'm trying to connect on Parsec a lot more lately, because I kind of, life was really busy. I was moving into my new place. There was a lot going on, and I wasn't able to get as many positive shared experiences as I wanted to. So I've been connecting a lot more lately with the community.
That has been definitely fun to be a part of that. And as we said before, great to see people in the Discord setting up games between each other as well. So it's not just always on you to facilitate these connections. You've been inspired people to do that as well.
Yeah, I love how many people are downloading Parsec, and the people like NBA Live Dude and Bobaluga, who are just blown away by it. By the videos that we were putting up on the MLSC showing the gameplay from those sessions, and then when they got their hands on the app itself, just being blown away at how well it worked. So yeah, we need even more people to be connecting.
100%. But getting to the community responses to the question now, first up we have Bucky T says, most definitely my brother, who's just 2 to 3 years younger than me. We always had this competitive edge with one another in sports in real life and the virtual hybrid in basketball. It's all up between us, but definitely a rivalry. And yeah, you can definitely speak to that.
Yeah, I think sibling rivalries can get more intense than friend rivalries sometimes. I think that there is this natural competitive edge that, happens when you're siblings, but it also can make those sessions even more intense and more memorable. And I have absolutely loved connecting with my brothers on basketball video games over the years. I actually did ask him a follow-up question on, what games was he playing?
Yes.
With his sibling, and he did give an answer.
And yes, he said, I'd probably say NBA Jam, the original, and NBA Street Volume 2. We nearly got into fistfights over these games. And as you say, that sibling rivalry, all love at the end of the day, but can definitely get intense. And it also says, and for non-hoop games, definitely 007, No Mercy, Madden, Donkey Kart, Twisted Metal, etc. And I'm guessing he means GoldenEye there, which we can definitely relate to. Madden, I haven't played as much of. No Mercy, the WWF No Mercy, one of the best wrestling games ever made. So, yeah, those are definitely great multiplayer games to connect on.
Yeah, GoldenEye 007 was huge in my house, and we had so many three-player sessions on the three-player split screen on that game. And when he said,
"Who was
Donkey
Odd Job?"
Kart,
who was Odd Job, by the way? Did you put a ban on Odd Job?
We didn't choose Odd Job. Actually, I can't remember. I think Trevelyan was one of them.
Yep, John Bean.
Right, and whatnot. But we usually played with the Golden Gun.
Ah, but it kills, was, yeah.
It was the one hit kills, because as you know, when you're playing without the Golden Gun and you're using automatics and whatnot, you can hit a guy sometimes 50 times and he still won't die.
Yeah.
So we wanted to have it just be more of a realistic approach. I guess a sim approach, you could say.
That's GoldenEye sim, yeah.
GoldenEye 007, GoldenEye sim. Now he mentions Donkey Kart there. I think what he's talking about is Diddy Kong's Racing, because he's mentioning it along the lines of the N64 titles.
Ah.
And I never really got into that game. I was actually more into F-Zero X and also Mario Kart 64. But a lot of people did like Diddy Kong's Racing.
I didn't play Diddy Kong Racing growing up. I have played it since. Of course, it does have Conker, the squirrel, in that game, who went on to star in one of the few adult-oriented games on Nintendo 64, Conker's Bad Fur Day, which is a classic. That is a Also a very rare collectible these days, very expensive to get your hands on, especially completed in box, which I do have. I'm sorry, I'm not selling it, and I have the PAL version anyway, so not everybody could play it. But that is a very fun fun platformer. Also has a multiplayer component to it, although I mostly played the story mode, the platform story mode of that game. Next up, we have Nate Starshow, one of the NBA Live 2001 legends, of course. Unsurprisingly says, my favorite person to play with is Roger Ward. He's also my least favorite person to play with. And Roger responds, the other Live 2001 legend, Roger Ward responds, my favorite person to get angry at is Nate Starshow.
So, I love those guys because, like I said, they play these games in a similar way that we do. They do like taking a sim approach, and they also enjoy that sim hybrid style that we like, and they just enjoy the classics, and they enjoy playing good basketball video games, and they, you know, are continuing to play as adults in a similar way that they played when they were kids, because they refuse to put the games down and they still have fun with them. So yeah, I've seen them get intense on camera, on videos that they've uploaded to their YouTube and clips that they've shared for the NLSC top 10. And there's definitely a lot of intense moments, but I think at the end of the day, they just enjoy connecting.
And next up we have Soon Be Great says myself. And that is something that I can definitely relate to, that, you know, if you don't have people to connect with or kind of local for local couch co-op or sitting around a computer or whatever, you know, that was my experience a lot growing up as essentially an only child in many respects. So yeah, I can actually relate to that.
There are people out there that even prefer that style of play, right? They just want to chill and play against the computer. There's some people out there that want to watch CPU versus CPU games, Andrew.
Sure.
Like
coach mode.
We've had that question in the Discord where somebody said, hey, is there anybody else out there that loves watching CPU versus CPU, because they treat it like they're watching a real game on TV, and they'll even root for a player or team, and, you know, they'll look at the stats and they get enjoyment out of that. So, you know, whatever your preference is, that's fine. However, I do want to say that if you are looking to connect with people, you know, if you want to have more of a shared experience, you know, connect with people on the NLSC Discord.
Definitely. Next up, we have Teddy Bear the Gamer says, my brother and uncle, we really have a rivalry. A lot of highlights are against my brother. Laughing emojis.
Yeah, he shared one after that, too, where he said, oh, my brother got me here, right? And that's some nice humility by him there. That's some nice honesty where he's like, hey, listen, he got the best of me here, right? And I love that because I do lose to my brothers, right? They lose to me. And many of those gameplay videos go up, you know, of both results. So, yeah, I love that. You know, he said he played with his uncle. That reminds me a little bit of, like I said, you know, I played with my dad and whatnot. So that is cool.
And finally, Stephen, the Live King, says, me and my twin brother used to have crazy battles in NBA Live. He used to light me up with Anthony Peeler on Minnesota, LOL. So many buzzer beater games in those early NBA Live 2000 to 2003 days. And look, buzzer beaters are always awesome. You brought up the one that you hit against me from beyond half court with Michael Finley in our makeshift retro teams game in Live 10. And yeah, it is exciting, even when you're on the wrong end of it. You know, there's still that drama there. You've still got to, as you said, applaud the effort of the other person to make that shot and appreciate the uniqueness of that game. But Anthony Peeler on Minnesota, what a throwback.
Anthony Peeler, another guy who could just light you up in video games all because he could shoot. How many guys were super effective that way in older video games? Even a guy like Dan Dickow, who my brother had a 100-plus point game with in one of the early 2000s NBA Lives. I mean, if you could shoot in those games, I don't care if you were an end-of-the-bench guy, you could just light up the other team.
And that is how a lot of virtual hardwood legends came to be virtual hardwood legends, is it not? Just the obscure player, or the non-star player, I should say, that became a hero out of nowhere in these games.
Yeah, guys like I stated earlier, like Walter McCarty, right? Not a great player in real life, but he had a 3-ball on his name in those early 2000s NBA Lives, early mid-2000s NBA Lives, and he would just absolutely torch you. It reminds me of the Matt Bullard game winner on NBA Live 2001 that one of the NBA Live 2001 legends hit, where he ripped out Hakeem Olajuwon and threw in Matt Bullard, and the end result was a win. So, like, a shooter is super effective in those old games, no matter how low their overall is. But a tall shooter can be an absolute, complete, and total video game legend at any given point because they can just always get their shot off.
And looking at these responses, obviously a lot of people enjoy connecting with each other, playing with each other one way or another. And it's why it's important that basketball video games do cater to both the single player and multiplayer experience. You know, you have that dynasty game, the franchise game, that can be single player. It's just you being a GM and indulging those fantasies and playing through seasons solo, or playing through seasons, or even just a single season as you and your brothers do cooperatively, multiplayer. So it's important to have those experiences, obviously, but also having that robust multiplayer experience. And look, taking it back to Slam and Jam, that could be a really fun multiplayer game, but with the way it was designed, the mechanics, the camera zooms, and both the zoom in general and the speed zoom, as you said, you know, we've enjoyed some rough games together, Derek, some games that aren't as good as the absolute classics. So we know how to enjoy games and get the most out of them, but that even together, that was a struggle.
I think the two worst sessions we've had on Parsec over the last 3 years was the Slam and Jam 96 session that we just had, and that most recent session on NBA Live 07.
Yes, using Adam easily. Morrison. Yeah. And they fell apart the same way, that we just were trying to do things, trying to do good things, but the bad mechanics just won't let us.
Yeah, and then we just start playing stupid,
yeah,
right? Because we're not interested in the game anymore. So we're just trying to buy time. And, you know, we started putting up, like in that Slam and Jam 96 game, we just started like putting up a bunch of ill-advised threes just like early in the clock because we were just like, screw it.
Can we make them?
We're just going to. Yeah, and we didn't.
No.
Just to let everybody know, I don't think we hit one three in the entire second half, even though we put up a ton, so.
I will say that it is fun to see players hanging on the rim and just watching the backboard sag like that, but yeah, it just doesn't make up for the rest of the game. Again, even playing co-op, as we've done so many times, and making it work with even some of the rougher games, even like a Live 08 or a Live 09. Live 09 is better than Live 08, and we do need to revisit that game again, but we have had some fun with some mediocre games, or games that definitely have roughness, but sometimes, you know, even our best efforts are not enough.
Exactly. But you know what? The point is that we can pick ourselves up and always connect on something else.
Exactly.
That's the way I look at it. And I think that even connecting on some of the poorer basketball games and sharing that footage, I think is helpful for the community, not only to educate them on what not to get, maybe what not to buy, but also, you know, so they can see how those games were made and how they played at that time.
There is a bile fascination at times with really poorly made games, isn't there?
Oh, no, absolutely. And I still put them on even when I'm not connecting with you on Parsec, because I love looking at the design choices. I love to see what they were doing with the art, with what they were doing with the game modes, you know, what they were doing with stat tracking, with presentation elements, with customization options. So even when you and I aren't connecting on Parsec, I'm consistently putting these games on.
And of course, I'm covering them for Way Back Wednesday, both the good and the bad. So stay tuned for all of our videos, our articles, and of course, talking about it here on the NLC podcast. With that being said, that has brought us to the end of this week's show. As always, we thank you for tuning in and invite you to join us again next week, either on the NLSC, nb-live.com, our YouTube channel, or your podcast app of choice. In the meantime, please connect with us on social media. That's where you can get in touch with us and stay up to date with all of our content. So, Derek, go ahead and plug the handles.
Yeah, you can reach me on X at D43G and at D4384. I'm also on the NLSC D43 and on YouTube at D43.
I am Andrew in the forum and Andrew NLSC on X. The NLSC is on X and Facebook at the NLSC. We're also NLSC Basketball on Instagram and Threads. We're on YouTube at youtube.com/NBA Live Series Center. And of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, NBA-Live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. So, thank you once again for tuning in, and until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone.